Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who wanted to express his profound grief at the death of Queen Elizabeth II, like Greggs and everyone. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Thank you. A lot of royalists in. Thank you very much, my finest friends. Welcome to another edition of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. But I was talking to 100,000 Paddingtons today, piled up on 100,000 rotting marmalade sandwiches. And they all call it Rahalastapa. So now that's going to... don't know. Not much has happened this week, so there's not much to talk about. I think the whole nation is obviously in mourning for the death of... Mrs. McCluskey from off of Grange Hill, so that's... sorry if I've just broken that to you. I genuinely am very upset about that. But I'm not allowed to take a week off for that, am I? Oh, no. for the people listening at home, because this is going out in a few weeks, this was recorded on the day of the Queen's procession through her coffin going through Edinburgh. I just think it's lucky that didn't happen like 2 weeks ago when the fringe was still going on. Because by the end of that, that would just be plastered in flyers. The bins wouldn't have been emptied. You know, might have had some advantages. So it's, explain the smell. This is going out live. I've got to be careful. This is being live streamed. And the good news, the game's good news. We've got a new king, God Save the King. Hopefully it works this time, God, if you're listening. You had one job. The good news, Prince Andrew is now 8th in line to the throne. So that is only 7... Only seven people need to die. Or to abdicate. I don't really want to wish those children. I just hope they'll decide to abdicate. Someone was arrested today for shouting at Prince Andrew. Weird, isn't it? That's what they'll arrest you for and what they let go. Isn't it? It's weird. It's weird, isn't it? Well, you know, he was probably very upset by that shouting. So anyway, look, we're going to crack. Hey, look, I'll do some... I was just going to advertise other things rather than risk cancelling myself. Twitch of Fun is back. You can watch Twitch of Fun on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Also on YouTube. It's really good. I'm really excellent at ventriloquism. Don't know if that's something to be proud of. Do come and say Rahalastapa live. RichardHerring.com/Rahalastapa. And I've got a new book coming out soon. I don't know if you've heard about this. I lost a testicle last year. Don't know if you heard about it. There's a book all about that. Look, I'm very excited and only slightly scared about this week's guest. We've been having a lovely... We have had a lovely catch-up backstage. Some tears have been shed. My guest this week is probably best known. There's a lot of things I could have chosen, but I think I have to go. She's best known as the girl who smelled of spam from the TV seminal sketch show, still celebrated today. Fist of Fun. Will you please welcome the incredible Sally Phillips, ladies and gentlemen. Sally Phillips. Sally Phillips. Spamel. Come in. Get down. Hello. do you still get people shouting?
No, I do still sometimes get that. I get a mixture of, you know, that and aha.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Think more
and come the fuck on, Bridget. There's a few of them now. But yeah, there's spam. Spam, ooh, was the first thing I had shouted at me in the street, apart from your shit.
We tried to revive the girly smarter spam for. Do you remember that for a sketch we did at the O2, the Apollo?
I completely forgot that, but that was a terrible disaster. Wasn't
it was.
It was just absolutely awful, and I just had a baby.
Right.
And I remember, I remember handing. There were all the male comics in the dressing room, and I had a baby.
Right.
And I was feeling really not ready to be there. The baby was too young. I just remember pushing it into Milton Jones's arms, going out, being insulted about smelling of spam, and then and then leaving again, taking my baby, going quickly home before anyone could shout spam at me.
But the audience completely nonplussed. It was like just... 3,000 people. Nobody recognised what we were doing at all.
No. It wasn't a return of a favourite. It's like people. It's like they didn't even know what spam was anymore. Never have I felt so old.
Though I was reading that your first TV job, I don't know if this was actually before Fist of Fun, was on Alas, Smith & Jones?
Yeah, it was.
With Mel Smith. It
was.
With Mel Smith.
My very first paid job, which was only a few weeks before doing Fist of Fun, I was in bed. I got two sketches for Smith & Jones. The first one was The Borrowers, and it required a near-naked couple to roll around on a double bed, reach for a condom and find The Borrowers, i.e. Mel and Griff had taken it. This was the 90s. And the other, so yeah, that was me. I remember being quite excited because I got some new underwear for free. And the other one was I was in bed with Mel Smith. It started on Mel, and he was like, "I'm terribly sorry, love. This has never happened to me before. It must have been the drink." And then it panned over to me covered in vomit, which was vegetable soup,
nice.
To which I was, it turned out, allergic. So I swelled up and had to lie in London Television Centre backstage for a couple of hours before I could open my eyes enough to see to go home.
Oh, my God. Do you think they'd mix something else in with
90s.
The vegetable soup? Have you never been covered in vegetable soup before?
I hadn't, no.
Wow. Oh, there we go.
you have?
No.
Tell me.
I probably. I mean, we've done a lot of terrible things.
Chunky showers.
I was good. The other possibility for the thing I was going to introduce you by was that you were Benedetta in the life of a lesbian nun in the Renaissance Italy.
I was.
Yeah.
That was a one-woman show that I co-wrote, in which it was based on a true... You weren't there. I was a student at the time. Which was based on the true story of a young nun. Well, her family gave her to a cut-price convent. And she sort of put up with it until she was about 22. And then she started, clearly sort of an actress of some kind, started faking visions and learnt to throw her voice and pretended to commune with angels.
Right.
And used this power to pretend to be male angels and seduce a younger nun. And so I did this thing. I played all 50 nuns. But Paul Verhoeven has just done Benedetta, the erotic film. It just came out last year. It was at Cannes. So it was nothing like that.
Can you get use real blood in
yeah,
this?
Yeah, the stage manager.
Yeah.
Yeah, stage manager, I said, because I was having to mime everything. It was that time, and also we were poor. And I said, can I have real blood for the... She faked her own stigmata in the, you know, when the Pope came. And Stevie went off to the abattoir and got lamb's blood. And I ran backstage in the dress rehearsal and tipped this vat of stuff all over me. It was absolutely disgusting. I was a vegetarian at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you spent most of your career just being covered in various different...
Covered in various different
fluids.
Things.
Fluids, yeah. Fair enough. But that was the name of being serious. So what was it that... Because you were doing... When I met you in kind of the early 90s in London, really, wasn't it? It was because we were both at the same university, but not at the same time. You were sort of doing quite a lot of serious drama.
I remember. So I wanted to be in Teatro de Complicité. And I was in a sub-Teatro de Complicité touring company, which used to do French A-level texts and tour around the country trying to persuade schools to come and visit. And often would perform to very few people. And I remember us doing a show, I think it was at the Turtle Key Arts in Fulham, and you coming.
Right.
I don't know why, because... Anyway.
I was studying it for A-level.
Studying it for A-level. And it was very... I think it was three... Or maybe it was Bellamy. Anyway, I think it was three of Guy de Maupassant's characters...
Yes.
...torture him for his unfair treatment of them as he's dying of syphilis.
Yes.
And it was very serious.
Very serious.
Very good. And he just laughed and laughed his way... And promptly asked me to be in his Edinburgh show, Rara Rasputin, a comedy biography of Rasputin the Monk, set to the words and lyrics of Boney M.
Yeah.
And so then I would go to Edinburgh, because I was already going up to Edinburgh, so all my expenses were paid, right? So I would torture Guy de Maupassant. I was actually playing a prostitute who died of syphilis herself.
Yeah.
It was very touching and challenging. And I would do that and be all sort of worn out and then run across town and put on a boob tube and flares and...
On like a tiny stage. Probably about the size of between these two chairs was the size of the stage.
Yeah, and I played Damien, didn't I?
Yes, basically.
Serovich. Yeah. And I did... Yeah, Damien from The Omen.
Yeah. It was about, you know, it was ahead of its time.
It was ahead of its time.
It was
the first
jukebox musical.
It was. It was really good.
Yeah. And it was very good.
It was really, really good.
The William Cook, who wrote for The Guardian, loved it. And he was on the Perrier panel that year. And it was really bigging it up. And then the Perrier panel came on a Monday and were literally the only people in the audience. And they just, it usually did really well and went very well. And we played to utter silence. And
but
did not
I
get nominated for the Perrier Awards.
I owe you a lot, though, actually. That musical actually started my career.
Right.
Because I could not get an agent to come and see me die of syphilis for love nor money. I was like, I would send all these pictures of myself with, like, P.S., I cartwheel. Can do seven accents and cartwheel. Also, can wear corset, no problem. And then it was sort of frustrating because I did nothing really in Ra Ra Rasputin.
Oh, I think you were.
I mean, I literally wore a boob tube and flares. That was it. By the way, it was the '90s, as we've established. And and I got an agent straight away from that.
There you go.
So thank you very much. And that agent was Rebecca Front's agent. So I sat in Rebecca Front's slipstream and took all the things she turned down. And the rest is history.
Incredible. I think it was, there were some good parts in there for you. It was good. It was, you were very good in that. And I reckon, you know, you were funny right from the get-go. I recognised you as being extremely funny, and you still wanted to really be a serious actor, which is just,
I don't think that's the tragedy of my life.
Yeah.
That the more serious I am, the more people hoot with laughter. Like I was trying to get my passport photo done, and they kept sending me back going, "You're smiling." I go, "I'm not smiling. I'm actually weeping here." I'm thinking of death, and that happens in shows, you know, in films. If I have to look really, really sad, I have to go so dark in my head to get a kind of neutral expression. You really don't want to know what's going on. And all those years of doing comedy don't help, because your face sort of sticks like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But you're extremely funny, and you know, and it's amazing looking. And you know, I knew you'd done lots, and obviously I've followed your career, but you've been in so many things. In fact, today I was just watching one of your latest things, which is an Australian film called How to Please a Woman, in which you're fantastic. I think it's really
I keep waiting for the joke.
I didn't think I was going to like it. I feel like I'm going to be attacked.
I'm just waiting. Yeah.
And the thing is, I think you've done a lot of roles where you've been like part of a team, or you've been like, you know, a supporting player maybe. But this film, you are the absolute lead in and carry the whole film. And it's about a woman who sets up a cleaning business and then realizes that it's based on a true story.
That there were these Sydney housewives who were, you know, elasticated trouser, nylon trouser wearing women in their late 40s and early 50s who decided that, you know, they were not prepared to give up on sex, and lots of their friends didn't want to give up on sex either. So they organised a cleaning business, which was only men would come and clean the house, and they would also offer sexual services on the side. And the director, who's actually an incredibly shy and slightly repressed person, became completely obsessed with these women, and decided it was a really great, you know, form for a story for discussing female desire.
Well, female desire and the importance of knowing what you want and explaining what you want and communicating in both directions. It's a very charming. It's in the spirit of The Full Monty or something like that.
It's a solid 2-star film.
I know. I think it's.
You know, it got 3 stars in The Guardian. It's not bad, you know, it's not bad. She wanted it to be reach as broad an audience as possible. And she's not a comedy director. She didn't intend it. She wanted it serious, serious, serious. And, you know, I think she did keep some of the gravity.
I think so. I think it's an interesting subject. I think it's solid 4-star myself.
Thank you.
But you know, especially for what it is. But it's, but you're. I think one of the reviews said, which is completely right, that you realise how good you are because you're quite uptight. Or the character's quite uptight all the way through, and towards the end, becomes a little happier. I hope that's not a spoiler for this kind of film. She goes through some struggles, and then it works out all right for in the end.
I'm so surprised to be talking about like proper work. I thought I was going to have an hour talking about my Vash Kiri voiceover.
It may come to, but because I've literally just watched it today, I thought we'd talk about it first. But you know, but then when you were, it's so lovely when you were, the character is happy at the end, and the difference is so marked.
I really loved it, and we got to go to Perth, which was in the lockdown, which was great. To go to the most isolated city on earth was completely fantastic, and I love Australians. I really, really love Australians, and especially Australian actors, because they're so open. And you go, "Wow, that was really good." And in England, if you say to someone, "Oh, that was really good," they'll go, "Oh, you know, same performance, different wig," or whatever. They always put it down. And in Australia, they go, "Thanks very much. I worked really hard on that." And it just feels so—it's just so much more relaxing when everyone's just honest about what's going on and care deeply about what they're doing. And and also, it's not a bad place. It's beautiful.
Very nice. Have you been much to Australia much before?
I was.
You're born there, right?
No, I wasn't born there, but I did go to school there.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because you had a life. As a child, where you were all over the world, your dad was working in the Foreign Office, was he?
British Airways.
British Airways. I did know that.
Yeah, you did know that.
I did know that.
He did know that because he did actually live with my family for a while. We didn't know if we were going to talk about it. We did go out with each other for a bit.
Did we? I don't remember.
Yeah, did we? I don't remember. Yeah, he doesn't remember anything.
I've been out with most of my guests.
And that's why... And that's why I've come wearing entirely witchy green. No, it's fine. We're
well,
over
your
it.
Dad
fine.
Was a very, very strong tennis player before he was.
he got
to the U.S. Open finals.
Semi-finals of doubles. Yeah, he did. He played in 3 out of 4 of the Grand Slams.
And that's the reason that I was sitting next to the Royal Box at Wimbledon.
That's the reason you
when
were.
When Princess Diana, which I mentioned last week, tried to get off with me, and if. At that, we weren't
I
in
think
a relation-
the awful thing about that story is it's actually true. There was genuinely... Because I was going out with him at the time, remember? And I was standing there and he suddenly goes purple and so does Princess Diana goes purple. And, like, it's one thing to be chatting up other people when you're with your girlfriend, but to be winking at a princess...
I pulled a funny...
It's not on, is it? Hence the green.
But last week I said that if she'd invited me back to the palace, like, you would have had to let me go, right? Especially, you know, in hindsight, knowing how...
Yes, I know that how little time she had left.
You'd want her to experience that. Just one moment of happiness in her terrible... her terrible life.
Terribly miserable life. You could have had a three-way with Dodie.
He too had a, you know, he didn't have long to go, so that would have been,
You're a generous man.
So let's talk. Well, seeing we brought it up, let's briefly talk about.
Okay, let's just clear the air. I'm truly sorry.
You mentioned this on Mel Gerdroyt's show, which
Unforgivable.
Unforgivable.
The unforgivable thing I did.
In which we...
came after the unforgivable thing that you did.
We're in a relationship and we broke up, and I think the mistake we made was we sort of liked being broken up more than being together. And
you,
liked each other better.
You did. You
well,
did.
You did as well.
I thought I wanted to get married.
Yeah. Well, you know, in hindsight, I wish we'd married. We could have had a family.
No,
could have got that out of the way, and I could have been shagging loads of people now. So, the joke's on me.
His mother wrote to me. Well, your father wrote to me. Yeah.
Well, you love my mum and dad more than
I did. Yeah, maybe I did. And your lovely sister with her gorgeous kids.
Yeah.
And they all played the tuba. Did they all play the tuba?
They played the one of them played the trumpet.
I feel like. And they lived next door. His sister and his mum and dad lived next door in someone in Cheddar, and it was just a really nice setup. And his mum grew amazing tomatoes that just were wonderful.
She loved my mum and dad more than she loved me, which, you know, again, I'm now the same age as my dad was then. So.
Yeah. And you were about to go into...
I'm basically him.
You were about to go into your leather trouser-wearing phase, so I'm really, really glad I missed that.
That was only fun stage. It's interesting what different things we remember. I was just going to... The fact that a trumpet becomes a tuba is probably indicative.
That's good, right?
Yeah, it is. I hope it applies in all directions. So it's... But we did a show together after we weren't on, off, and off.
I thought this was why it was such a nightmare, right? I thought we were back together, and you thought we're just having, my son is in the room, casual sex. And many a mid-20 relationship, you know, goes wrong on this, people not being entirely clear about that. So we started, and I think I didn't realise straight away, but that show, Richard Herring is All Man, was really an explanation of why you couldn't have a long-term relationship. Yeah. I didn't really realise that because it was sort of coming in bits. You know, the sketches, I didn't really understand that it was partly about why you could not be with me. And I had to be the wisdom character, didn't I? And I had to... Didn't I have to...
Well, I don't remember.
Tell you you couldn't be with Mrs. Stimpy. There's Mrs. Impy. After going, oh, you must, yes, you'll right. spread your wild oats. So it was a bit, it turned out, but once I
thought
I realized,
that was you saying that, Sally. I didn't understand it was the character.
Yeah. And so the thing I'm truly sorry for, Richard, and I'm being witnessed here, that we started doing this thing, and Richard was by this stage seeing someone else, and it was just, I went a bit bonkers. And at the time, I was doing a show with Arthur Smith, Arthur Smith's Hamlet, and Arthur hadn't written it. So I rang Richard from Bath, went, listen, we're on to... I mean, for example, Arthur said, Sally, at this point, there'll be a point where you play the piano. And I go, I can't play the piano. They go, yeah, you can, Sally. You can do anything, anything you want. You went to Wickham Abbey, for God's sake. You can play the piano. And there was genuinely a bit where I just try and play the piano, not having any idea how to play the piano. And I rang Rich and I said, listen, I've got to be Ophelia and there's nothing to say. Can I say that, you know, Hamlet has just dumped me because he's got a show coming out on BBC Two and he wants to sow his wild oats? Which had been... was a joke at that point because I thought we were back together, and you said that's fine.
Okay.
But by the time we actually got to Edinburgh, yes, you did. By the time we actually got to Edinburgh, it was no laughing matter, and I was properly angry. And and so, but I sold you more tickets because people used to come and see the double. So they'd come and see Richard Herring is all man and watch me breaking down there, yeah. And then come and watch Arthur Smith's Hamlet.
You saying you heckled me? I don't remember that.
Did heckle you, yeah, backstage. I remember because there was a bit where he did a piss take of me dying of syphilis, that show. He go, my name is Guy de Maupassant, he said. And I can't remember. I do remember going, you're a shit actor from backstage. And Graham Linehan, sort of afterwards, almost grabbing me by the scruff of the neck and going, I'm not going to try and do his accent, but you know, you can't do that, Sally. You can't heckle him during the show. It's a bit much. Maybe wait till after. Yeah, so I'm truly sorry. I didn't put your real phone number on the thing. You know that.
I do. Well, I thought, no one rang me. I'd have quite liked I was very lonely enough.
So we had Mad Frankie Fraser in the show. So Arthur was sort of contrasting Hamlet, the man of thought, with Mad Frankie Fraser, the man of action. And we'd had lunch with Mad Frankie Fraser, and Arthur went, did you ever kill anyone? I went, of course I did. And the joke was that Ophelia had put Hamlet Herring's phone number up on... Dick Kipper, actually, that was the name,
Dick
wasn't
Kipper,
it? Dick Kipper,
me,
yeah.
I'm
really sorry.
It's all right. I went to see.
I'm genuinely sorry.
I went to see the show and I did enjoy it, but because
it was it transferred to the West End. It's quite good.
But I'm a huge fan of Arthur Smith as well as yours, and so I saw there's part of me that was quite flattered.
You were more of a fan of Arthur Smith.
But I was quite flattered to be in his show. But I think it was
quite damaging and not very nice.
It's quite a damaging thing to happen.
And I'm really
sorry.
To
both of us, though, so I'm very sorry as well.
It's okay, I forgive you.
No. I absolutely forgive you because you're a terrific woman. And I made...
I'd say stop here.
I made a terrible... and I would like to propose to you now today. I'll just let... No. Fuck it.
It's weird getting older, isn't it? Because, I mean, these things are so big. They feel so big in your life. But we were 24, 22... Yeah.
We
it's
were
a long
children,
time ago.
Especially me. I was especially a child. So you dodged a bullet, I think. Is no, the
straight back at you. Anyway, I've got my lovely son here, so it all worked out fine. Ollie, where are you?
Yeah.
There. That's Ollie's just turned 18. Yeah.
It's all right for you to say my kids are dicks. They've been looking after them all weekend.
And my cousin Connor's here. Can I say hello to Connor? Connor? Hey, Connor. Thanks for coming. You could have been related to Connor.
This isn't Swap Shop. You can't say hello to people. This is not it. There's people listening at home you can say hello to, and everyone you know at home.
Hello, Keith Herring.
It's still going. They still talk. When I did Relativity, I put a bit about the tomatoes in
the
I saw it.
There
you go. Sorry. We're through the difficult bit. Perhaps, there was something I wanted to talk about the previous Edinburgh. I can't remember what it was now. It's got lost. About you did, we did Rich Herring's Fat the year before. What was I going to say? Can't remember.
Rara Rasputin was completely fantastic. I think you should bring it back.
Well,
and also Boney M. Like, what an underplayed band. I mean, awesome. Boney M. Come on now.
The thing with Rara Rasputin was all about Charles and Diana, which we might be able to update it now. It did all kind of fit. I mean, I think...
But it was mainly about the Russians, wasn't it?
Well, it sort of was, but it sort of wasn't. It was sort of...
Wasn't it?
It was.
You were Rasputin.
I was Rasputin.
Yeah.
But I had Mr. Kipling's French Fancies, which I don't think is. I think that's canonical about him. It may be. Well, we did Fist of Fun, despite having broken up.
Did we?
Yeah.
I thought that was before we broke up.
No, it was after.
Oh, did we? Yeah. Oh, there we go. Yeah.
I insisted you were still in it. I don't think many people would have done that.
No. So, well, I'm a great guy.
But also, I knew because you were brilliant in that show as well.
I didn't know that I was.
Anyway,
I'm as I said, very grateful. I owe you my career. Thank you very much. And I'm deeply sorry.
can I have a part in the new Bridget Jones film, please?
I'm not in charge of that.
I did audition for a part in Bridget Jones. Yeah.
Which one?
I think it was a character that got cut out of the film. I wasn't right for it. There was a man interviewing somebody.
Oh, yes, I know who did that. Yeah.
But
in the fire station.
It was in a tent or something. I don't know what it was.
Oh, right.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure. I think it got changed anyway. I did watch it and I recognised some of the lines, but I wasn't very good. You are very good. You were right. You were right when you heckled me back in the show.
No, I heard you on the radio this week. You've got drama on the radio. Uh-huh, very good it is too, and you were very good.
Oh, thank you.
Look, isn't this boring when people are nice to each other?
Why haven't you been nice to me in the 1990s when I needed to be... And everyone else is being horrible to me. And I had to go through Steve Coogan and Patrick Marber telling me I couldn't act. Why weren't you there?
Did they?
Oh, they were horrible. They were fucking
were
horrible.
They?
Yeah.
Were they?
You
were horrible to Patrick Marber. You used to do a
thing
about...
Yeah, that's why we were horrible
to
Patrick. Yeah, I've sort of...
You got your revenge, though. I mean, every single episode you had you had Patrick Marber's face on some spoons or something.
I saw Marber at Steve Coogan's 50th birthday party, and he saw me coming towards him, and he went... He was talking to David Baddiel, and I said, oh, hi. He said, oh. And then I said, oh, you still cross about that? He said, yes. He was quite upset. But I apologised to him. But we did a show called The Dumb Show that was the first show we did, which should have been amazing. It was Steve Coogan, Patrick Marber, Stewart, Simon Munnery as a kind of wild
genius.
Card.
Genius.
And me. And we tried to reinvent the sketch show, but people weren't ready for it. And I think they just thought we would write all the sketches and they'd do all the sketches. It didn't.
But didn't you write on the hour?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's seminal.
It is, but there we go.
I remember going to my first comedy awards when that was nominated and not being able to take my... I didn't know what, you know, these awards, I don't really know what you were supposed to wear or whatever. I'd run to Camden Market and got a cheap shift dress and matching bomber jacket. And it was really hot and I couldn't take the bomber jacket off because it shaved my armpits. Just getting hotter and hotter and hotter. But also being bedazzled by Birds of a Feather and people like that.
That was the last
did
one.
Did you win? I think you won.
We might have won with On the Hour, yeah. I've never been... I think I did two years with On the Hour and have never been back to the British Comedy Awards. But the last time I did it, I cut my hand. anything like that where there was free drink, we would just drink as much as we could.
They do it on purpose now. They don't give you any food and they give you loads and loads of drink in the hope you'll behave badly.
Yeah, so we behaved badly and I cut my hand and I had my shirt covered in blood and then was never invited back. And the last time I went to the BBC Christmas party...
Don't do that.
I got so drunk that I got Stephen Moffat, the writer of Press Gang and Doctor Who and Sherlock.
The entire time we were going out, he had a pin board above his bed with a big picture of Julia Sawala on.
It's not true.
And I had to say, could you put a photo of me up there?
It's not true.
Yes. Big Julia, tiny me. It's true.
It is true.
We had a joke in the show. It's true. And then guess who he went out with after Catherine Shepherd? Julia Sawala. Well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Again, careful what you wish for, Sally. That's... How many more actresses did I have to go out with before I learned my lesson? We started climbing up the Christmas tree.
Beg your pardon, what are you talking about now?
BBC Christmas party.
Oh, right.
I think it was a staircase behind the Christmas tree, and I crawled up it, and Stephen Moffat was crawling up behind me, and then I never got invited to the BBC Christmas party again either. But he did all right, didn't he?
Yeah, Stephen Moffat, yeah. I was married to Dexter Fletcher in something.
Oh, yeah. How's he doing? Film.
Yeah, he's lovely.
Yeah.
He's so nice. In fact, we did talk about you and Julia.
She once called me Dexter when we're having sex. So tell him that next time you see him. Great relationship, so it was good. It's good. It went well.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's talk about you.
Or not, I'm easy.
This is what the people wanted. But like, you know, look. Another thing I was nearly going to introduce you by, which is what I introduced Simon Pegg by when he went as my
six pairs of pants.
Six pairs of pants.
Yeah.
Can you remember all the people in Six Pairs of Pants?
Yes. Yes, I can.
Can you?
Well, Simon Pegg.
Yeah, I gave you
Jessica
one.
Hines.
Yeah.
Katie Carmichael.
Yeah.
Neil Malarkey.
He was.
And
well done.
Simon Schatzberger.
Wow. Did better.
Of course,
I
can.
I don't think Pegg could do. I don't think Pegg remembered them all.
Didn't
I forgot Malarkey was in there, I'd have to say, until I saw it, yeah.
It was a bit weird that Neil Malarkey was in there, because he was about 10 years older than everybody else.
He was.
Yeah, and none of us enjoyed it. Did he tell you the story about us? So it was this really, I'm going to say shit, shit sketch show for Meridian and Anglia, but at least it was something happening, you know, where none of us had done anything before, really. And... yeah, but it was incredibly cheap. So they had us staying one night in Truck World for £5 a night. It was like a motel with famous truck bumpers up on the wall. And they had a blue comedian and a stripper in the bar.
Wow.
And there was sticky trails along the Hessian walls and moths stuck in the lamp. It was awful, really awful.
You didn't tell us about that, yeah.
Yeah, but that's where I can't remember what Daisy and Tim,
yeah,
the characters from Spaced, originated there.
Yeah, so it's all of these things are important, and hippies as well. Was that before? Was that hippies after Smack the Pony?
Was it? Don't before? Know. I can't pass. Remember. Hippies is not as bad as they said at the time. I think Hippies suffered. It's really, I think it's really good. It's only one series, and it's written by Lynn Herner Matthews. It was their first thing after Father Ted. And it really suffered from coming out a couple of months after Spaced. So it was shot in a sort of, it was deliberately shot in a Prozarch, you know, BBC aquarium style sitcom to look like it was, look like a 60s thing. And Simon is the lead with Julian Ryan Tutt playing sort of 60s hippies. Darren Boyd's in it, he's brilliant. I'm in it, I think I'm a bit average, to be honest, but they're fantastic. And it's really, really funny and stupid. But Space came out before and just turned everything on its head because you had Edgar Wright doing cinematic shots for the first time. So up to that point, really, you'd do your funny stuff and the camera would catch you doing it, whereas this was you were having to do your comedy stuff. The camera took precedence and made everything else look really old.
Yeah.
And so, sorry, I'm being sort of quite boring.
No,
but but it's not as bad as they say.
And of course, well, there's, I mean, you know, Smack the Pony and I'm Alan Partridge. Mm. It was like, that was a pretty fantastic period of time where you were getting to do that.
Yeah, well, it's weird, isn't it? Because we were, like, you and I and our gang, you know, we were getting thumped a bit by the world, but at the same time, we was just so arrogant. I didn't realise that it wasn't going to carry on getting better. So, I mean, I'd seen you and Stu in your sketch meetings shouting at Sarah Smith, going, no, we're not doing that, that's shit. We're not going to do it like that, it's going to be like this. No, it's like this, so we're going to resign, kind of thing. And so I was a bit like that in Smack the Pony.
Right.
So I was like, no, I'm not doing that, that's not funny, I'm not going to do it. And I remember some of my favourite sketches of Darren Boyd and I literally refusing to do what's on the page. And Victoria Pyle just giving up with us, like sort of, you know, three-year-olds going, okay, well, what do you want to do then? You've got 10 minutes, you've got to think of something else. And sketches, like, there's one where he and I are in a bar and I say, what music do you like? And he says, oh, I like that one, you know, and then he just sings an entire song. And that was born out of us going, I absolutely refuse to do this terrible sketch that is there. And another one with getting a glass stuck to my face, sucking a glass onto my face and not be able to get it off, and running in high heels, things like that. They were, yeah. So, I mean, it was just incredible freedom, and a freedom I've never had since.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we did. But I think it doesn't exist anymore, that freedom, really, unless you're Amanda Iannucci or, you know, there's very few people, Reese and Steve seem to have it as well, who's coming up. But you know, there's very few people who are allowed to do exactly what they want. And that, but that was the, that, you know, we were, like, very cocky.
And, yeah, we
and
were.
And rightly and wrongly. And so, but that's the, you know, and we did, there was that belief, and it was a gang of people, and certainly for those sort of 5 or 6 years, it sort of...
But it was formative, wasn't it? So you sharpen each other's humour, so you do get better.
Of course.
And as you get older, you become more isolated, and then you're much easier to spook. So someone goes, oh, I'm not sure about that, then I'm very quickly not sure about that too.
Yeah.
Whereas there's a gang of us, we go, no, this is good, is it? They go, yeah, it's great, it's brilliant. They're an idiot.
It's true. That is true. And so, wait, how did the Partridge part come up? And how did you do you remember how you got that part, or is it?
I auditioned for it.
Okay.
I auditioned for it. Yeah, and I'd written a radio drama for Radio 4, and I was recording that. Written it for John Fortune and Eleanor Bron.
Wow.
To, I don't know, you have to be old to know who they are, but they were amazing.
They are amazing.
And that was a junior minister for transport having to go up a tree because he said he would if they built a motorway through his constituency, right. Which feels sort of, I don't know, like I haven't got a copy, I'd be quite interested to listen to it. And I went off and auditioned, and the story goes, I was told later that they had been auditioning a lot of supermodels because Steve had said, I think she should really, you know, she should really throw Alan. He should come in and she should be so beautiful that he just can't cope. And they'd auditioned the supermodels and they hadn't been very funny.
Yeah.
And so then Armando had decided to audition some people who were funny. And I remember him coming in and thinking, oh, the funniest thing to do now is laugh and leave. But if I laugh and leave, I won't be in it very much. And I'm thinking, actually, that's quite convenient because I'm up in Edinburgh and it clashes. So that's what I did, and that's what stayed in. And, I was incredibly fortunate to do that.
Yeah. And with Spat the Pony, did you try to do that again quite recently? Was there a sort of talk of reforming?
Well, we've got this thing where people come up to us the whole time going, when I say recently, like, you know, the last 10 years, I guess, people come up all the time going, are you doing another one? Will you do another one? Can you do another one? Oh, we really miss it. Will you do another one? And so occasionally we would, because we're mates, you know, we'd get together and go, well, do you think people really want another one? Well, should we put something together? So we put together all kinds of different things. So I wrote we sort of improvised, and then I wrote up a thing which was three sisters all kind of getting divorced at the same time. And that went a certain way with Channel 4, and then there was a change of personnel. And then we did a sketch show thing for the BBC, and that went a certain way, and then there was a change of personnel. And really, to be honest, I can't be bothered anymore. People still come up and say, will you do another one? And I think there is something to do with older women. I mean, older women are not on the telly in the same way. Or, you know, there's certainly things to say about the older female experience.
What TV is failing to acknowledge or realise is that only middle-aged people watch TV anymore.
Yeah.
So there should be more programmes for middle-aged people.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to get... It's dead. Once we're dead, it's dead.
So, that is true.
So there's that, but it would be fantastic. And the three of you are, you know, are still at top of your game, still all fantastic. Fiona's doing lots of stand up now.
Yeah, yeah. Dean's amazing.
Always working. And also it'd be great to see, because it was such a youthful kind of energetic show. It would be sort of fun to see it with.
I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
It just feels like there's so many struggles to have there. One is, you know, what you do with the previous brand. You know, do you do it the same or do you do it different? And then it's, you know, can you live up to it or not? And the sketch show is dead. Long live the sketch. I mean, how are we doing the sketch show these days? And it just feels like if I were going to do a sketch show, it'd just be a lot easier to do it with someone else. So there was none of the other baggage.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing pretty well doing movies and stuff.
So solid two-star movie guy. I'm a two-star movie star.
In some ways, doing a sketch show might be a backward step from being in films. But there's another Bridget Jones. Is there coming up?
Who knows? Oh, okay. I mean, they announced it in the papers, and the availability checked me for now.
Okay.
And I'm here. I'm free.
This is part of it. I got the job. This is the character I'm playing. Did pretty well.
Yeah.
I auditioned for I wanted to, but I didn't.
That's a hilarious story.
I auditioned for Bill Grundy in the Pistols thing. They wanted me to audition for it, and I learnt it all and got it and started doing an impression of him, and then they just cast Kevin Eldon.
Kevin Eldon.
Yeah, Kevin Eldon did it. The actor Kevin Eldon. He was good.
Kevin Eldon's in a lot.
He is in a lot. He's doing pretty well.
He is.
Edward.
I haven't seen Kevin for ages. Who is he?
I haven't seen him for quite a while. I saw him at when I was doing Lisa Tarbuck's show. What was that even on? Do you remember that Lisa Tarbuck panel show, game show I did? No.
No.
Don't think it was. Was it? Maybe it was House of Gay. I did a show where I elbowed Denise Van Outen in the face accidentally. I think it was the same show. But I got quite drunk, which is why I ended up elbowing Denise Van Outen in the face. Have you ever hurt a celebrity?
Apart from
accidentally,
you.
If you hurt me. Higher.
No, but Hugh Grant doesn't talk to me.
Oh, really?
Because I got very drunk in Thailand.
Right.
And was very indiscreet, and then he became afraid of my giant mouth. I lost my flip-flops in the sea, and I was sick in the guitar bar sand toilet. And now he doesn't talk to me except on set.
Right, okay.
Which is completely fair enough.
We could get you to make up with Hugh Grant. He was there when I did a gig for, which I've mentioned many times, for Theo Fennell, the jeweller store.
Theo Fennell, Emerald Fennell's dad.
Yeah. Fennel is his name.
Is it?
No, I don't want to call him Fennel. I'm not fucking calling him Fennel. It was like all the most famous...
Herring.
It was, yeah, Herring. It was like Elton John and all the most famous people in the world.
You did a gig.
I did a gig. I had to do 5 minutes of talking cock.
That's terrifying.
I found it quite funny, but Hugh Grant was the only person who laughed. So I like Hugh Grant.
But he started in comedy.
Yeah.
He had a triple act, and he called the Jockeys of Norfolk. He doesn't talk about that much.
Is this why he doesn't talk to you anymore? Do you remember that time he got sucked off by that and that prostitute? That's probably why he's not talking. Do you remember that? Do you remember? Who remembers that? Is that what you went in with? Do you remember that? What was that all about? Why were you getting sucked off by that? You can get sucked off by anyone. You're Hugh Grant. You don't have to pay a prostitute. Is that why?
I didn't go off with that. No.
You didn't go in that way. Well, you've done a lot of amazing shows.
And?
But the best one is Justin's House.
Yes.
Tell us about Justin's House.
Well, Ollie, do you remember Mr. Tumble?
Yes.
So... when I had Ollie taught me sign language, Makaton. And the way we learnt that, Makaton is a kind of baby British sign language, and you do it alongside speech. So it's to give a visual prompt when people are learning to talk. And people with Down syndrome are brilliant visually, have great visual memories. So it really helps to give a visual prompt. And I did a course. Makaton stands for Margaret, Karen and Tony. Astonishing, right?
Wow.
And they used to charge you to do it, but I think they've had to back off on that because you can't, like, charge people to use a language.
No.
Or maybe you can, I don't know. But anyway, there's a brilliant programme on CBeebies called Mr... Is it called?
Something special.
Something special, yeah. And Justin Fletcher, who's a man... I had an Australian maternity nurse for one of my kids. She says he's got children's teeth. That's why the children like him. He's got baby teeth. He's got all his milk teeth. It's weird. I said, Mr. Tumble. That's who did Mr. Tumble. And so I got... Okay, I'm going to tell you the absolute truth. Should I tell you the absolute truth? Because this is a party line and there's the absolute truth. So the absolute truth is I get a call from my agent going, CBeebies are doing a learning day. I wonder if they can interview you. And I was like, well, you know, I mean, I'm at home, got a lot at that point. And I was like, yeah, okay. I mean, it's not going to take very long. I just turn up at White City, do that and then leave. And I had absolutely bog all to say about anything. And I got trapped. I don't know if you ever get this, but you just start... I started saying how great Something Special was. And before I knew what had happened, I was, you know, eulogized, going, this is, you know, it's the most amazing program for inclusion. It's just profoundly touching. It's meant such a lot to my family, which it did mean a bit to our family, but maybe not as much as I made out. At the end of which, the producer came, Alan Johnson, a very nice, smart guy, came up and said, since you like it so much, would you and your family like to be on it? Yeah, okay, why not? Why the hell not? Yeah, so we go down to Brighton and we have a family day on Something Special. And I'm quite pregnant at that point. It's really hot. And the kids, do you remember it all? Do you remember it? And the kids did a lot of standing near the Helter Skelter but not going down it, being near the sea but not going in it. We went to the aquarium and you, Ollie, all you wanted to do was get in the water with the turtles. And I was trying to keep you on the boat and you're trying to dive in and I'm trying to smile for the cameras with Ollie trying to go in the water. And a bit of a wrestling match going on. And then, anyway, that was such a huge success that he invited me onto Justin's House where I got to play Wander Round. And I've never seen it, but apparently it has been screened 40,000 times.
It's good.
It's quite touching, that. Yeah. I mean, it's quite touching, because you're doing a sitcom, a live audience sitcom like we've done, but everyone's under five.
Yeah.
And it's so sweet.
They go crazy. I can sing a lot of the songs to you if you like. I can remember them. Justin's House. That's about it. Robert the Rogue, because when I watched CBeebies a lot when especially with my daughter, not so much with my son, but when my daughter was young, I watched CBeebies all the time, yeah. And fell in love with Rebecca from CBeebies. It was very complicated, but I would tweet about it all the time. And I knew all the songs to everything. And Robert the Robot, that guy, tweeted me to say, "Hey, I'm Robert the Robot in real life." It's good, and I was really pleased. And the bloke who plays. It's a bit while since I watched it. What's the ones that I could used to sing the whole song to with Uber Corn in it? That one, the Go-Jetters. The bad guy from Go-Jetters listens to this podcast.
Robert the Robot is also the voice of Fireman Sam.
Is he?
He is.
Well, they're very talented guys.
They very are.
And we met Justin, but my daughter doesn't remember meeting him. Oh. We had to wait half an hour to meet him in a corridor.
Yeah. I remember saying to him, so, I mean, he... Okay, the absolute truth. Justin, I think it must be terrible. Yeah. Because special needs parents, we are quite entitled. So I think they're always coming up to him going, could you just open this primary school? It's only going to take 3 hours of your time. Could you just come and see this dying child? It's only going to take 48 hours of your time.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's just really, really difficult. I mean, I sense he's become afraid of the public.
Well, I just
he's retired to Henley.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine. I mean, he's very successful, so, you know, that's one thing. But I was just sort of thinking from his point of view, if he ever, I don't know if he's got kids, but if he ever had kids, he can't ever take them anywhere because all the other kids will just be going nuts. Because even if he'd just been Mr. Tumble and then not been Justin... They wouldn't know. They can't. Kids can't tell the difference between the two. They think they're two different people. I mean, but if he, you know, he can't walk down the street.
What's interesting is that. I mean, I really, as you may remember, or maybe you wiped it from your memory. I really love clowns. I mean, I really actually love clowns.
Is that why I had to dress up like a clown?
Just going to leave that there.
I remember you like proper clowns.
Proper clowns.
Like,
yeah, I went to clown school. Went to three different clown schools. So I tried to engage Justin on clowns, and he had, I would say, a near total ignorance. But then I saw him being interviewed a few years later, and he was, you know, up to speed on who was who by then. But I think he was made a clown by CBeebies, and
forced him to be a clown.
They forced him to be a clown.
Yeah.
And now he's pestered by special needs parents. And has to live with his 9 Cadillacs in Henley and never go out.
But you've done some great stuff for disability rights, and especially obviously around Down syndrome.
So have you.
I have. But...
And that's how we began to make peace, ladies and gentlemen. because you very bravely stood up. So Ricky Gervais made a comment about, I'm going to repopularise the word.
Don't start this again.
What? Am I not like? Do you want to talk about it? I'm going to repopularise the word Hmong. And that's not okay by our community. It's hurtful and, you know, Hmong and retard, just not. All right, they're very, very hurtful. And people aren't as sensitive to those words as they are to some other words, you know, different groups. And... you very bravely stood up to Ricky Gervais on Twitter and kind of went, that's not all right. And you got just destroyed by his 40 million Twitter followers. But I woke up that morning and our community, imagine my displeasure, ladies and gentlemen, to see my inbox full of Richard Herring is a hero. Oh, my God. If I ever meet this man, I'm going to kiss his hand, I'm going to buy him a drink. What a brave man. I'm following him, I'm buying tickets for his next show. So...
Well, I mean, I just said think about words before you use them and then, you know, and think... Because it was... I don't want to get Ricky Gervais fan. It was really horrible. Ricky... Stuart's just been in trouble with... Stuart's just been very rude about Ricky Gervais. Whether he's right or wrong is up for debate, but he's right. Though I'd love to get you on the podcast, Ricky, still, so do come on. But I, you know, I just wrote a blog because I've been doing a lot of work with Scope, but just because I've sort of fell into that accidentally, really. There was no personal connection to it. But I just...
And that's partly why they loved you so much.
But yeah, now I've only got one bollock, so, you know. Does that count? Am I...
No.
Okay. It counts. Thank you, Ollie. I've always liked... To be fair... I've been giving him biscuits and sweets and crisps backstage, so he's going to agree with anything I say. But it was like, I think in the end, Ricky kind of backed off, though he didn't back off straight away. But he did send his people after me, but it was just a torrent for 3 days. My Twitter feed was like going that fast, but if you stopped it, it was just people saying, "You spastic, you mong." You got to go. Yeah, maybe this is still used as an insulting phrase if all the fans are just doing that. So, yeah, you've really proved Ricky's point there that now that word has been. But anyway, yeah. So it was an unpleasant time. But you've done it.
That's happened to me a bit now.
Yeah.
Mainly since the documentary, normally about these issues.
Yeah.
And Piers Morgan's got set his foxes on me. And that's really funny for a day and then really awful.
Yeah.
And who else? Yeah, Liam Gallagher, he had a go. I pulled him up on the R word.
Okay.
It doesn't the first after the first time it's happened, it doesn't really bother you anymore.
No, it doesn't. But you know, but obviously it's an important subject to talk about, and you've done a documentary about
We did a documentary together, didn't we? Or? Yeah. It was quite good. Ollie got to meet lots of people with Down syndrome, which was great, because I think before we did the documentary, I never intended to put Ollie in it, but before we did the documentary, Ollie felt quite negatively about his Down syndrome. He would say, "I don't like my Down syndrome, I've finished with it." And then afterwards, we met all these amazing people like Sarah Gordy and Tommy Jessup, and you could see that it was cool. Is that right? Yeah. Mum's right. And I could as well. I could as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, but it's important. You know, it's important. It's great that you're in the public eye and able to, you know, make these points and talk about it.
I'm over it now.
Good. Yeah.
That's it. Job.
And he's 18 now. He's out on his own.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's fine. Good luck, Ollie. I think he's going to be all right. I mean, you know, I've met him backstage, and he's. I think
he's
he can
full
look after
of shandy
himself.
And ready to party.
We'll whisk through some other stuff before we finish off. But Veep is incredible, and you're incredible on Veep.
Well, I'm just incredibly lucky. I got that. I mean, you know, many people debts of thanks, or your whole career is just a series of accidents. But I got that because Rebecca Front is terrified of flying. So Amanda had got that job for Rebecca, and she decided she didn't want to go to and from Baltimore. So I was basically born on a plane. I love flying. I'll go anywhere if anyone pays the plane flight. And so, and she was a complete heroine of mine. She's Julia Louis-Dreyfus is just one of the most brilliant comedy actors of all time, of either gender. And so, yeah, lucky me. I got to go and was a bit worried because I had to improvise in, you know, I had to be Finnish. And I didn't know, I'd never been to Finland, didn't speak Finnish, and didn't know anything about, I'd say, politics in general. Not just Finnish politics and not just US politics, but all politics. And so, yeah, I was really worried. I read loads of books and I watched all of Borgen and I stalked the previous five Finnish prime ministers on Twitter. And I started to learn Finnish on the island. I was really scared.
Wow.
And then it was fine. And we had really great chemistry and really made each other laugh. And so it's, you know, really amazing life experience.
What do the people of Finland think of your performance?
Well, at the beginning they were like, oh, you know, her accent's really dreadful. But it wasn't really dreadful. I don't think it was really dreadful. I think it was all right. All the Swedes thought it was brilliant. So I think if you're Finnish, it was not good enough. But yeah. If you were from anywhere else, it was fine.
I mean, you're good at languages, but Finnish is like no other language in the world, is it?
It is, and also 60% of the Finns, I think it's 60%, speak Swedish.
Okay.
And so I was like, well, you know, surely you can be slightly Swedish if they speak Swedish. But I've recently discovered they speak Swedish with a kind of Finnish accent.
Okay.
So it's all about rolling your R's. you know.
There seemed to be a lot of K's in Finnish, for my memory. Yeah. It might just have been... My show, yeah. Talking Cock, went to Finland. It was one of my favourite ones... Because they did it as far as I could tell, fairly true to the original.
Sorry, they translated your play, Talking Cock,
yeah.
into Finnish.
Into Finnish.
You're kidding me.
Danish, Swedish, French. The French one's done really well. Might be coming back if there's any French listeners. There was talk of it coming back. They did. They put out a DVD without telling me, and I had to sue them. But they're.
So how do you say Talking Cock in Finnish?
It's like something like. That's why maybe there's just in Talking Cock. I think it might be called. There's a lot that's like Prick Speck. One called Prick Speck, which I think was in Sweden. They changed the titles, but some of them just completely changed. I think it's the Danish one. I went with my director Jeremy Herring, who's an incredibly successful director now, and works in proper theatre. But he's did some of my early plays and directed Talking Cock. And they completely changed the whole thing and put songs in it. And there was a song, and it was like to the tune, so there was an Eminem one, and then there was one to the tune of Send in the Clowns, and it was really serious, right? He was singing something in Danish really seriously, and we were on the front row, because I don't know why they would... So I don't know why they put us... Because absolutely nothing in the show was the same as what I'd done. And we just really started uncontrollably laughing at this song, and everyone was like looking at us like this. And then after the show, we said, "What was that? Sending the Clowns song?" It was like I've never, you know, like at school when you are not meant to laugh and you're laughing so much, and it was like all the way through. Probably about 5 minutes. I took just like not being allowed to show that we are laughing. And then he said, "Oh yeah, that's a song. That's quite a serious song about date rape." But to be fair, that was so out of keeping with what my show was about, which was a celebration of nice people and nice men and women together. And so it was kind of... It was nice. It was fun, though. I got to go all around Europe and see all these productions.
Amazing.
It was good. And Finland was very nice. Hello, Paula, if you're listening. I had a nice time in Finland. So...
This play, I'm really sorry I didn't see it. Was there a talking cock?
There wasn't a talking cock in it, no. I didn't. It was more of a stand-up show than I suppose.
Right.
But it was, yeah, it was just... it was all about the penis. And I've just written a book all about balls. So I've completed the set, though I don't have... Ironically, I don't have a complete set.
What a legacy.
It was like
I had to turn down the vagina monologues because I just didn't think I'd be able to do it without snickering.
It'd be nice if someone was. No, the vagina monologues was a response to the vagina. Well, not a response, but it was. I was doing Christ on a Bike at the Arts Theatre, which was used to be the Leicester Square Theatre over there, but it's still there. And the vagina monologues was on before me, and it was always full of people. And then I'd go on and do Christ on a Bike, and there'd be 25 people in there. And every time in the bar, someone said, "You should do a male version of the vagina monologues." I went, "Don't be stupid. It's such an obvious idea. I'm not doing that." Then I thought, "Oh, maybe I'll do one. Maybe people will come and see it." And then I thought there wasn't. I thought men needed to talk. But then that's, again, back to your film. It's about the communication, people talking about their sexual needs and desires. And it's an important thing.
So. Yeah, it's very hard.
Yeah.
If you're British, I think. Well, I just find it incredibly hard. I found the worst thing about doing that film was doing the press. Because... I was mortified, and all the interviewers were mortified as well. So none of us knew how to talk about it.
Even though you've learned from the film?
But my character is there to be really embarrassed throughout, so I was really embarrassed throughout. So I was the only person in the film who wasn't having sex. But it was very moving, really. We did... the only nudity was in non-sex-related scenes. So we had a women's changing room. And there was a woman, you know, all these different bodies and a woman going, "Oh, I just had a really bad, you know, life experience, bad experiences with men. And I just felt like this would be a good opportunity to, you know, claim a bit of power back." I mean, the Aussies are just much better at talking about that stuff than we are. End of discussion about the film. I just can't talk about it. I just can't. It's really embarrassing.
It's not embarrassing. It's good. Right, what's coming? We better quickly go into anything that's coming up. The things that I've found you're doing coming up. Oh, there's so much you haven't talked about. Taskmaster, I loved you having sex with that water cooler. That was amazing. That was amazing. You were so good on Taskmaster. It's the banking on Mr. Toad.
I don't know. I don't think that's happening.
Okay.
It's a film. Basically, films, you know, they just, their finance falls away. So you get, you know, you get signed for something. And,
yeah.
And then, like Bridget Jones, you know, I'm booked. It's been announced. I'm booked for now. But it's been delayed. So yeah. Let's see if it happens.
Well, what is happening? You've set up a production company with Ronnie Ancona.
I have set up a production company with Ronnie Ancona called Captain Dolly. And we're a group of small companies. This is just very boring.
No, it's not.
A group of small companies, and we're hoping to make lots of low budget, well, high budget eventually, but we want to make some films, some comedy films. Our dream is, you know, wouldn't it be lovely to have your own comic strip?
Yes.
You know, a gang of people who you thought were really funny. Just as we were talking about back in the 20s, a group to get really arrogant again with in old age and just, you know, back each other up and get sharper. You know, you get fewer and fewer opportunities to actually learn, I think.
Yeah.
So that would be
great.
There's
so many talented people. I think that, you know, and I think you know, we were talking backstage about sort of improvised films, and I think there's so many comedians who are capable and so many comedy actors who are capable of actually improvising good dialogue, which is obviously, as a writer, you're able to do.
We're hoping to do quite a lot of international co-pros as well. So I've got a film with Sweden, which is great, which hopefully will go next year, and then one in Italy as well. So there are not that many low-budget comedy companies working with other countries. So yeah. I hope that will be a way of travelling.
Is there someone to help you and Ronnie out with organising everything properly? Because I just... Just worry about the two of you being you two being in charge of something.
Yes, yes, there is. She's called Leila Musabi, and we're hoping to get another fantastic person on board to help us. Yeah, right. You're completely right. You've absolutely identified the problem.
I mean, Ronnie is more nuts than you are. So that is. I do love her very much. Is there anything that you can talk about that's coming up? Apart from that, have you got any...
I think so. I mean, I did a film called The Statistical Probability of Love at First Sight, where I was married to Dexter. And that should be coming out on Netflix in the next couple of months, I think. Right. And then something called My Happy Ending, in which I die of cancer.
Well, I'll definitely watch that one. So it's definitely watch. It's been lovely to see you again.
And you.
Why did we stop hanging around?
I think it's because you were going out with so many other people, couldn't get over that.
I love you, and thank you very much for coming on the show. Sally Willis, ladies and gentlemen.
Richard Herring, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Sally Phillips. Thank you to Scant Regard for providing this music. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, like that one, and all of the Go Faster Stripe team. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre and Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. This is a Sky Potato Fuss and Go Faster Stripe production for the internet. Go to GoFasterStripe.com. There's loads of goodies to be had.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.